the blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Sangham Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient and anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo Prajna Paramita Hridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. the precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts: not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so, not to take that which is not given, not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct, not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority, not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so, not to publish other people's faults, not to extol oneself and slander others, not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings, not to be angry, not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana, in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. O happy blessed day, O happy blessed place, O happy blessed time, O happy blessed path, O happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutiyampi tatiyampi sabha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. We are here to end suffering. If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer so we can drop that and end suffering.
For folks who are new to practice, there are bat jacks at the corner that you're welcome to help yourself to if you'd like one. Who are here and have been practicing for a while, that this is the first full day of a There Is Nothing Wrong With Your retreat. So when you share, if you would keep in mind that we have some new to the language people and adapt your discussion accordingly, that would be lovely. And this is a time for anybody to talk about what they would like to talk about.
I've been having some really good practice success.
Really good practice success.
Yeah. I thought I would share. So I'm in this time of my life where I don't sleep properly. And sometimes I go along with, you know, that if I just lay here longer and then I might sleep more, then I might be better.
Right. There's always a chance I'll fall asleep.
There's always a chance. It seems so small, but it's such a chance. And sometimes I really get hooked by that. And every now and again it works. But mostly it doesn't work. And so recently I made this movement to stop getting hooked by it, and I have to set it up when I go to sleep the night before. So when I wake up, if it's 4 o'clock, I'm going to get up. If it's 2, I don't get up.
Okay.
But at 4, if it's 4, there's, like, it never works to fall back asleep after 4, so I'm just going to get up. And I do my practice.
Uh-huh. So you do whatever morning routines you have as part of your practice.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And out of that commitment has grown this clarity during the day. Mm-hmm. That is really reducing my anxiety.
Uh-huh.
So
it's having an impact somewhere where you might not have anticipated it would have an impact.
Well, it's right. I've always known it had an impact.
Mm-hmm.
But it's having an impact in a way that, like, so I think anxiety has been this underlying theme of my life, even though I didn't have a way of acknowledging that or identifying that.
When you're in it and swimming in it, you can't say, this is anxiety.
Yeah, I think that's what athletics has always been about for me. But actually, there's a line in Zen Enneagram class that's going on right now. I'm a 7, and then we're doing this thing about shadow wing and ally wing. Mm-hmm. And there's this line about the 7, when they do all these different things out of unacknowledged fear. Mm-hmm. And that line, unacknowledged fear, is so big. Because I realized this year sometimes, and it seems like every coping behavior that I have is a result of fear.
Uh-huh.
If I use anger back, it's really I'm afraid of something.
Yeah.
But of course, I didn't acknowledge that, so it is another problem.
Right. But you hadn't seen it.
Because I had seen it. I wasn't going, no, I just didn't see it.
Yeah.
But if someone said, you know, you're fearful, you're upset, anxious, I'm like, really?
I don't know about that.
And so, which is why in our practice we don't tell people how it is.
That's, I was just thinking that. Yeah. It's got to come from the person who's looking at it. It can't come from something.
Right, right, yeah. It really has to. So the neat thing has been, in the discretionary time that I have, and there's always way more tasks to do than there is time, the question that I pose to myself is, what task will take the most care of me?
What task will take the most care of me?
And take the most care of me is, what task will reduce the anxiety the most?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What will a completing make me feel calmer and better and more?
Yes.
And yeah. So it all...
what a wonderful way to prioritize.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I notice I'm spending far less time like trying to get to hard things and avoiding them and just doing one thing at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to share that.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say trying to get to hard things, so there's a list of things and they may all appear hard, but the question you ask yourself...
A lot of them are way harder than others.
A lot of them are way harder. But when you ask yourself that question of what will take the most care of me, do you address that level of difficulty?
Yes.
Yes,
I address that level of difficulty. So, like, writing has historically been really hard. There's so much procrastination and push-pull around writing.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'll think about what I want to write and like, come and I'm like, well, I could write that right now and that would reduce a lot of anxiety if I just took care of that. I did this morning.
Isn't that fabulous. So taking care of perhaps one of the most difficult things may take the most care of you.
Without a doubt, taking care of the most difficult things takes care of.
Because that's not the information we would get sort of habitually. It's you've got to put those off because they're so hard. We can't face them, but you've turned that around.
Well, to say that I've turned it around implies like kind of like a done deal.
You're in the process.
I'm having some success with that.
Yeah. Just like the middle of the night, if I wake up at 4 o'clock, I get up.
Right, and just like the success of today, all that same conditioning will be there tomorrow. So I have to start. Like, I can't go, oh, this was a great day, and then stay up late because it's so fun to be up at night because there's no pressure because I've done all these hard things, and then hope that I sleep better, and then I need to sleep more, and then I buy that story, and then the anxiety builds, and then I can't make good choices because I'm really tired and groggy, and blah, 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 blah.
Which is really neat because you're describing a process that you are aware of, you repeat and repeat and repeat.
And it sounds like I can believe it so easily.
That is not successful.
It's successful in keeping me in the place of not having the life that I want and feeling anxious and feeling pressure but not being able to take care of the things that would reduce the pressure.
Yeah. So finding a new way to be with all of it that is so far successful.
It's so far successful when I'm really present to this process which I just laid out.
Yeah.
And there's always encouragement within to not be present. It's all changed.
Right, it'll be fun to stay up late. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And to not, and so in being present to that, it just was really. It feels like I'm the luckiest person alive. Takes me from a place of wanting life to be different and something to be different to that. I am present and can be present and create my life and love everything that's there. It's a pretty big difference.
Nothing is too trivial to bring up.
Yes.
anything can mirror who we are. Anything can show us our process.
Yes.
Yes, and the conversation that suggests it's too trivial is probably yes. trying to get us from talking about something that, in fact, is not the least bit trivial.
Well, perhaps, yes. I actually talked about this in Thursday's group, I think. Anyway, no, it wasn't here. It was anyway, recently. And it's about my golf game. And having what's known as the yips.
The yips.
The mm-hmm. yips, which is this kind of nervousness that overcomes you, kind of, it's seemingly out of the blue when you're usually putting the ball, which is just rolling it across the green.
Yeah.
And just for those who might just know absolutely nothing about golf, that's what that
yeah.
means.
Yeah. It calls for sort of a calm,
yes, yes,
smooth.
Yes, yeah. That would be ideal. And of course, the voice in my head says this is too trivial to bring up in a group discussion.
Because it's only.
Because, my God, it's what? The people starving to death all over the world, and you're talking about this. Well, I don't know about it. I can't speak for someone.
Yes.
But what I have seen about the process of suffering within me, what having yips has mirrored is a very profound way that I don't take care of myself. That this person gets abandoned, and first of all, I shouldn't have the yips.
Right. This is the wrong way
this
to
is
be.
The, yeah. Mm-hmm. People, I'm too good for that. I'm too good of a golfer to have that.
Mm-hmm.
People who aren't very good have that. that has been working. Inside of me, and I haven't seen it.
So having this issue go on when you're putting
means something about me as a golfer, about me as a person, about it's insane.
And it's something that is not good at all.
Right.
Yeah.
And of course, it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
That's just what's been kind of going on at a very low level within me that I haven't seen.
We have little labels going on in there
yeah.
that we don't notice.
Yes.
Yeah.
What to do about it has been a just real fodder for self-hate's grind her up and spit her out machine.
Mm.
Basically, you shouldn't have it to begin with. To get rid of it, you just have to, and the term I've been using is gut it out.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't bring any consciousness to it. Don't bring any compassion to it. Don't treat yourself like a decent human being. Don't talk about it because it's too trivial.
Yeah.
Just get rid of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
it's brutal when you kind of put it out.
Yeah. So I'm very grateful to have seen that all of that has been going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's been going on for quite a while.
Until recently.
All in a kind of a level that I just didn't see.
Yeah.
Which is then becomes another area where self-hate can get me. Because how long have you been doing this, Jim?
Yes.
That you didn't see all of that?
Yeah.
So that's predictable. I can just drop that.
Yeah.
So I'm just grateful to have seen it.
Uh-huh.
And, if there if there is a way that I can affect this person who all of a sudden gets nervous over her pets, then I have a possibility of seeing that now.
Yes, there might be ways there to actually take care of her as she's going through that very difficult experience.
Yeah.
Rather than shut her out, how do we get rid of her?
And interestingly, what I just saw in that instant was that it's frightening to have fears. Frightening to the golfer.
To the person, in fact, who loves golf.
Yes.
And now there is this...
Yeah, what if this...
opportunity.
Never, what if this never goes away?
Yeah.
So it's good to bring it all out into the open. And I have no solutions. I just feel like I have more possibilities.
Yeah. Yeah, it's reminding me so strongly of years of panic attacks that I couldn't let anybody see.
Yeah.
Which, of course, just completely intensified the panic attacks until I was able to start. I mean, because if I sit here and say I get panic attacks, it's a really good possibility that I won't, because I don't have to hide it from anybody. It's so powerful to be caught inside with the kinds of self-hate, as you said, the kinds of brutality that conditioning can do to us when we're kind of doing something that it may be behind in the first place. Let's go, Penny. We're on down.
That was really helpful for a number of reasons. One is that, I rather pride myself on being a good athlete. And recently I played miniature golf. And yips isn't even a strong enough word. It's yipes. I had a hard time keeping it on the little track, I'm actually keeping it on that particular hole. It's just amazing how awful I was. And it was exactly that, it was getting all lined up and then like every muscle in my body jerking. Just quite fascinating. That was part of what I was reminded of, but particularly what that brought for me is the thing I mainly have to be reminded of is that all we're ever doing is practicing.
All we're ever doing is practicing.
Yeah, and I was just hearing into that because, when something like that I'm used to doing well becomes difficult, then I can get focused on the difficulty and, it's getting focused on that content. And what I was just being reminded of by that was, if I can stay with all I'm ever doing is practicing, I'm not being an athlete, I'm not being a golfer, I'm not being a jogger, I'm not being a tennis player, all I'm ever doing is practicing, then everything is okay.
Yes, yes. And how, with that, are you practicing? Could you describe a little bit about it?
Well, one place where I'm seeing, I mentioned here that I have I injured my arm a couple years ago. Feels like that.
Seems
a couple
like
weeks ago. And so initially was practicing by being sort of remarkably okay about it, And I'm still okay about it, but I'm noticing the statute of limitations has run out.
You should be over it.
I should be healed now. First of all, I shouldn't get injuries. Because other people get injuries.
Good athletes.
Don't get injuries. Mm-hmm. Don't fall over their own feet and get injuries. And I should heal faster. So I would say it's probably 85% better. But I'm tired of it. So I'm just noticing that I was just practicing with it. It was fine. I just noticed the last couple of days becoming impatient. Get over it.
Yeah.
Get over it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so there's a place to, if I can keep coming back to, all I'm ever doing at any moment is practicing.
Yes.
Not being a person who has two totally functional arms.
not being, you know, a healthy, well-coordinated person, but just practicing,
right,
then that change of focus helps a lot.
Yes, yeah, yeah. So taking the focus back to practice away from the content of arm, get over it,
yeah,
get over yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also for me, taking it back from an identity, you know, of being the person to whom these things do not happen, and if they do, she heals fast.
Yes, yes, that tries to solidify an image of you that then is supposed to be non-changeable, when in fact, of course, we're all changing every nanosecond.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it occurs to me, just as I'm hearing myself being reflected like that, that it's very much like, I'm awake at 4 o'clock, so I might as well get up. You know, so I have an injured arm, so I might as well just practice with an injured arm.
Yeah, yeah. Because I can imagine the conversation, what it might do for me is, I should be over it, so I'm going to use it more. And I re-injure it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's a temptation.
Yeah.
And we're stacking wood right now.
Yes.
And I notice, you know, the practice is, see what it will do.
Yes, let the arm tell you.
The identity is, make it do something it's not ready to do.
Yeah.
And that's the, you know, kind of, that's the practice edge. And mm-hmm. if I can just stay with, you know, I've said this a million times, and one of the things that's just, I have to keep coming back to is, all we're asked to do is notice. And it never seems from an ego's standpoint that that's enough.
Yeah.
Because we're supposed to do stuff. And it's the same kind of thing. I was just hearing what people were saying is, all we're ever asked to do is practice. And the ego will say, that's never enough.
Yeah.
But that's all we have to do. But boy, staying on that point, that's the challenge.
Yeah. And it's helpful to have something like an arm injury, to have you kind of walking along that, seeing which side you're on.
Yes. And as you said that, somebody immediately said, no, it isn't.
Yeah.
And someone else said, yes, you're right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there it is.
And exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Let's see, Todd,
yes.
Then Alex.
Well, I've been watching and noticing. a great practice opportunity. It wasn't great in the beginning. This experience of poison oak that I've had for the last month.
Poison oak.
Yeah, poison oak. And it was just this morning, I was looking at the sequence of events, or they just dropped in, and I'd never had it before. And I've heard a lot about it. I've heard a lot more about poison ivy. But
yeah,
poison oak is...
Same thing.
Yeah, same thing. Poison oak, I mean, maybe north, but poison oak around here. And I'd actually fallen into a false sense of security that I was actually immune to it.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I'd been to the monastery quite a few times, and I've been in the bushes.
Never had it. Yeah.
I've never had it. And didn't take the guidance to use certain precautions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't go with that line of thought anymore. So, you know, here's the guys. Use these certain precautions, and you probably won't experience it. So I didn't, and I got full-blown poison. So in the beginning, it was very troublesome.
Mm.
Very troublesome. It was, mm-hmm. Oh, it does
itch.
Oh, it itch. And if you scratch it, it burns. Yeah. And then there's such a temptation to scratch it. It's just because there's that momentary relief.
Yeah.
Which, you know, but you know, in the long term, it's just not helpful. And then it was just funny, a couple of days ago, nature brought me a little diversion from it. Multiple wasp stings. You get those. And all of a sudden, poison oak isn't on your radar. You know?
The body can only handle so many sensations at a time.
Exactly. So I've got these nice wasp stings I'm dealing with, and I'm like, I just noticed this morning, like, oh, my poison oak.
Yeah.
And which was, there was so much resistance in the beginning to it, but I've had it for almost a month now, and now it's kind of like an old friend. It's endearing in a way that I've taken the guidance of putting on a lotion quite often as I can, because it erupts and then it settles and it erupts and it settles. It's very fascinating, actually. And it's kind of like, you're scaling a bit, and it's kind of like, you're cleared up. That's nice. You know, it's like, and it's, and I just saw this morning when I was putting on my calmine lotion that I've been to a big place of acceptance with it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just,
yeah. Yeah. It's one of those things you might as well, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, the lotion helps to a point.
To a point, but it's there.
But there's still the itch and the rash and all the different transitions it goes through.
Yeah, yeah. And now, just slowly, 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 it's departing. It's leaving. Mm-hmm. It's saying adieu. It's done its thing. Mm-hmm. And there's been some huge improvements. And mm-hmm. And it's just the whole practice opportunity around it has been really fascinating. And I will definitely take the guidance next time. If I'm even near a bush or a tree or a twig or a leaf, I'm going to bathe in that stuff.
Yeah, it's remarkably powerful in really very is. Small doses, and it does tend to be invisible a lot of the air. Yeah. So,
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Alex.
I could probably say volumes about that myself. But,
a few things about poison oak,
But I think what's coming up for me in the discussion so far has been, well, I guess it is actually related to all of it, is that believing the voices. And how unhelpful it is in general. And
so believing that conversation in our head that we sometimes think of ourselves thinking, but as we watch it, we see those voices.
So the area that I'm watching them now is the one in which it feels like I need to know how to do something before I know how to do it.
Nobody else have that. Yeah.
I'm just amazed at how completely it's everywhere. It's so huge. I'm so surprised that it's been absent from my awareness for so long. You know, it's like there in plain sight, invisible in plain sight. I watch how it. Has me pretend to have a certain air of confidence about something that pretty much convinces myself and everyone else, as far as I can tell, that I can do something.
Because you know. You know how to do it. You've never done it, but you know how to do it.
It'll even start presenting facts and quotes and information and stuff like that, and it's maybe it's a guy thing or something like that. I've heard people complain about that. You know, it's like, you know, maybe it's time to ask somebody where we are. It's just that kind of annoying ability to do that. So maybe that's the one thing that is just kind of like up in the forefront that I'm just happy to acknowledge and I can really resonate with. Boy, it's just a happy occasion to notice it, acknowledge it, and now it's there in plain sight, and it's not ruling my life, or it can, but at least it's no longer something that I can go, yeah, I know that. Yeah. You know, another thing to kind of fold into that, I know all about that mix, but it's...
So you have some little flags, if the phrase goes through, yeah, I know that. It's ding, 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 ding.
And it's really related to feels like acceptance. Like if I know the answer to that, or if I can do something, if I can do everything, then I'm far more valuable. You know, I'm less likely to be, you know, whatever. And the irony of the whole thing, and this is how conditioning feels like it works to me, is that that whole setup puts me in a position in which I screw it up, or I don't know how to do it, and do it really badly.
A big whoops.
And it's like, all right, you know. And it's almost like it had been better had I gone along and said, you know, I really don't know how to do that, because then I would have been shown and I would have been successful. And that's how conditioning works. Is it's like, it's not supposed to go well. And if it does, it's a complete fluke. And, you know, it's just setting you up for the time when it's just going to really cut you off at the knees. Yes. You know, and it's something just is so endearing about the place of humility with all of it. Is that, you know, like, because I watch other people not know how to do things, and I just, like, my heart just is like, oh, wow, thank you for saying that.
What a relief.
Like, I would have hated to have thrown you out into, like, you know, fending off that bull. you know, without knowing how to do that.
Yeah.
You know, I would gladly show you how.
Yeah, so recognizing not only there's a relief in being able to ask, but there's there are people who would like to be able to show you.
Yeah, and it's funny because I can see what a pain in the duty it is when that person says that they know how to do something and they don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because
yeah.
all the ramifications, it's just so perfect.
Yeah, it kind of doubles the whammy. Because then not only do you not know how to do it, but it gets screwed up, and then you get all the stuff from inside and outside.
Exactly, yeah. It's just like the process that I see is like related to the process of communication. It's like, oh, don't bother them. They, you know, you can't tell them now. It would just be bad timing.
Yeah.
And, you know, so put it off. Don't say anything about it now. And, you know,
right.
After
that
a while.
Hole in the ship.
And then it's like, oh dear, there's a hole in that Titanic. I should say something about that as it's going down. But it's really, it's like the big one for me right now. It's,
so really happy to be seeing it.
Yeah, really happy to be seeing it, and really wanting the experience of something other than what I've grown up to think is the way to learn, which is to know how to do it before you learn, and to actually get immersed in it and find out how. Because I'm in a situation, I'm several situations right now where I'm just like, I really don't know what I'm doing, but I'm going, and I'm watching and it's like, boy, this is so not helpful. You know, I should really say something about, you know, okay, so. Are you saying that the first step is this and the second step is that? Because put it in a frame it in a way that I think will be successful. And I can hear that that's someone who loves me and cares about me saying stuff like that, that wants me to know how to do all of those things before I actually go off and do them rather than just making it up. Could be spending hours of time doing things that are totally not helpful and have nothing to do with what it is that I was supposed to be doing.
And miss the opportunity to really learn.
Really miss the opportunity to really learn and really care and do the thing in a way that is different than I've always done it. So just that. I love that. Like, it's so insignificant to talk about it. That's so perfect because that's exactly what would try to convince me not to bring up something like so small. Like,
Thank you.
Jeffrey. I feel exactly the same way, and I've been looking at feeling like I need to have a purpose in life.
Needing to have a purpose in life.
Yes, in like a big, broad way. Like, in 10 years, I'm going to do this.
Mm.
I'm working toward this thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I noticed that the same process is happening so much on a very, very small, small scale.
Uh-huh.
But I am washing dishes, and there's a goal, there's a purpose.
There's something you're working toward.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
And then something else. So there's a thing that I'm working toward that if I get to will make me a good person.
Mm. Bottom line, it will
something.
Make me a good person.
Yeah.
Not that I'm already one, but that it will, that will
indeed,
be,
yes.
Yeah.
I need to go through these steps, and then life comes in with getting poison oak or breaking my arm, that sort of stuff, in the way of those things. And I think it's not supposed to be there.
Obstacles in the path that you have been convinced is path you're on to that goal, whatever that goal
yes,
is.
Yes. And I've been noticing how in almost every single moment, part of my energy is going toward having an excuse for what I'm doing. No, as if someone is going to come behind me and say, why are you doing that? And I need to turn around and say, it's because the dishes need to be washed. You know, I need to have something available.
Yeah, so there's always a sense that there's somebody right there about to point a finger and ask a question. And so you internally, it sounds like, are spending a fair bit of energy explaining why you're doing whatever you're doing.
Yes, or, you know, having that sort of conversation internally
mm-hmm. uh-huh.
with the threat that it's going to happen externally at some point.
So this is what I'll say one day, and it may not be that explicit, that there's a...
Right. Yeah. It may be more like energetically, I need to be prepared for this thing.
Mm-hmm. Which kind of makes sense when we think about ourselves as little people.
Exactly.
You know, and big people always want to know, why are you, you know, painting the walls or whatever.
Yeah, indeed. In a big way, it feels like mom and dad are going to come home and they're going to ask me what.
Yes.
Why is this?
Boy, you better be able to explain yourself.
Exactly. And in that situation, yes, but also like career goals and, uh-huh, and bigger, broader. Mm-hmm. I need to explain my existence.
Interesting.
I need to have a reason for being.
You have to have a reason for being.
Yeah.
Being alive isn't enough.
No, and enjoying myself isn't enough.
Enjoying yourself isn't
enough. Or being of service, or
yeah,
any of those things that you can do with the stuff that life gives you.
Yeah. So you're supposed to have a goal, and life keeps coming in and intervening in some way.
Between your goal. Reminders.
Reminders, yeah.
And lucky to have them. Reminders that maybe just practicing this.
Maybe just wash the next dish.
Yeah.
Nothing to explain, nothing to... Really, no need to have a conversation.
Yeah, be where I am.
Yeah. Yeah. We're here to learn how to do.
It sure seems like it.
Yeah.
It's not fun to try to do that other thing that's out over there.
Yeah. Susan.
So I was looking at a process around this content that you know about. So I was looking at, I've been looking at this thing that self-hate can do that it didn't do this time. So as I was reflecting coming down, I knew you were having this retreat. So I was looking at, so here the piece of content is that my daughter got sick and I thought it was the flu. And, but I was just doing the next thing. And there was this fluke thing where it occurred to me, maybe you should call the doctor and see if you can give her Motrin. And everything came in self-hate and said, you know, don't bother the doctor. You know,
you don't need to communicate.
You don't need to, right, you don't need to communicate. And I just thought, no, I'm just going to, you know, I just didn't listen. I called the doctor and told him, and he said, I want to see her. And then I said to him, oh, you know, it's a bumpy road, and I don't want her to get sick in the car. He said, I need to see her, because I told him the symptoms. And so I bring her in, and but again, you know, I'm just doing the next thing. And the conditioning that was going by, that had I not known, I would have just believed it and said, I'll bring her in Monday.
Yeah, if you'd been listening to, I'll give her a moment,
yes,
and we'll call him. He doesn't need it.
Right,
long,
you know,
and
I do this whole thing with doctors anyway. Now, this guy happens to be a really good friend of mine, but I do this whole thing about, is it really necessary?
Yeah.
You know, Western medicine, you know, I believe about it. So anyway, so I get to the doctor, and then he says, well, and it took a long time. He was very thorough and very, you know, calm. And it's not, like, impulsive. I mean, he spent a lot of time. And he was, I called at 2:30 and he was leaving at 3. So, you know, this thing is unfolding, right? And so then he said, you have to go to the hospital. And I'm like, ugh. And then my daughter starts getting scared and upset. And I mean, not super, because she's very stoic and doesn't show emotion very well. Hence, I didn't know how sick she was. So he says, but I think he knows me. What he knows, he said, I knew you well enough that I couldn't give you all the information. But what he was meaning is, I know your ego well enough that had I given it information, you would have gotten really worried and stressed out and paralyzed. That's what I do. I'm a six. So he gave me this much information. It might be this. We need to make sure. Take it. Okay. Drive along. In denial, right? And my daughter's sitting there, and she must have known intuitively, because she starts to cry. And I'm like, okay, Clara, I don't know the next thing, but here's what we know. We're in the car. You know, so I knew enough what to do. We're in the car. We're driving. Let's look at the trees. It's okay to cry. I can see you're scared. I'm right here with you. So I do my own little, what people learn later, you know. to do with themselves. I'm saying all those things to me, and I mean to her and me. So I'm saying it to me. And then we get to the thing, and I take her in, and I even say to the nurse, so in and out of self-aid, well, you know, the doctor told me that she only needed this done. She didn't really have to. Well, what I found out later was he had ordered it, you know, get the whatever it's called, you know, the IV going. And I said, because, you know, we don't really think that's it, you know. And so then I was sort of disoriented. I was going in and out of being present, breathing, staying with her, doing the next thing, answering the questions. And I just saw how, when somebody talked earlier about the freedom, I could relate with what ego tells me is getting up at 4 a.m. is not taking care of myself, when it's really the opposite of that.
Yeah.
So what I've been told 100 times, I should get to the hospital, there's an emergency. Ego has told me that. When it's really true, it tells me the opposite.
Yes.
I'm being selfish. I'm taking up people's time. It's not really that big of a deal. Bothering them for no reason, you know. And then the disorientation that ego does, you know, that self-hatred does, because then, you know, I'm still like in a fog of...
You're not on firm ground.
I wasn't on firm ground, although I would go in and out of it. Okay, the next thing, okay, here I am. My job is to hold her hand. She needs a massage. She wants the TV on. She wants the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now we go this way, you know. And I would see, you know, that nervous part of me just ask, you know, would come out and just say, well, are you sure this really needs to? And then I could see, like, the nurse would get what went through to my heart. So what made me feel better about the IV was she would get liquids. And I knew she hadn't drank much liquids that day. And it's like that would go through. Okay, I can tolerate that.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And then when they came in and said, you know, she's going to have surgery. No, they don't say it that way. I didn't hear it. I don't know if it was ego blocking or if it's just I didn't hear it, they didn't say it. But, you know, then they come in and the doctor comes in, the surgeon, and he says, okay, did you write the textbook to Clara about appendicitis or whatever? And I'm thinking, why is he saying this? She's fine. You know, she doesn't, you know, it's not that. And then...
So really watching...
I was so...
What's happening, what's present, and what the system, the conditioning...
Yes.
...wants to
it
keep you mired in.
It was fascinating to watch, keep you mired in, and from seeing, and from... And send sensations through the body, and... One of the most fascinating things was while she was in the surgery, while we're getting her ready, then I would ask questions. Well, can I stay with her till this point, until she goes to sleep? And one nurse would say yes, and the surgeon said, actually, no. And he was very nice. He tolerated me well. You know, I said, well, the other person said I could. And he said, well, you can't, and let me tell you why. But the anesthesiologist will give her this, and she's going to start getting really tired anyway. And she won't even know. But he said, you know, and again, I think he was talking to my heart.
Mm-hmm.
Because he said, you know, you are the mom. And that we're going to do things that you won't understand. And essentially, you'll get caught in your story about what that means, and it doesn't mean that. She's okay, she's in good hands, but we're going to do things, and your body's going to shake in a certain way, and it would scare you. And so that's why you can't stay in there. He didn't quite have that language, but that's what he was saying. He was really nice.
That's what you heard for yourself.
Yes, that's what I heard for myself. And I got it.
Mm-hmm.
Egocentric karmic conditioning will run with this story and torture me and terrify me.
For as long as possible.
For as long as possible, if I do this. And so then I was out waiting, you know, during the surgery, and there was this total peace, because I could look at the unfolding that had happened, where I had not listened to ego.
Yes.
Where I could have.
You and didn't give her the Motrin.
I didn't. Right.
Yeah.
I could have just, and I, or just, you know, it's not that big of an, just, you know. And then when they came out, they said she was 2 hours from her, whatever, erupting. I said erupting, I don't know. Literally 2 hours. If I had waited 2 hours more, it would have been much worse. And the doctor, who's a friend of mine, came all the way there and was in surgery with the surgeon. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, I can't believe you called. And he said, I'm so glad you called. Mm. And I said, I can't believe you were available to take the call. Because he's not usually, the nurse said, his answering person said, oh, actually, we can just ask him. And, you know, I knew that while I was waiting. And then I would watch ego come in and say things like, you know, you have to sign this form that tells you all the risks of whatever. You know, vegetable for life. And I would watch ego throw that stuff in, and then I would, it's like life would show the truth. The truth is, you called, you're here, this is where she is, she's in the best hands possible. And then, you know, that,
trying to pull you back.
Yes, but what about this, your firstborn, and oh my God, and you know, her face, and she's alone in there, and what if, and I mean, it could have. Ego could have gotten me and tortured me for that whole hour, and it didn't. It was blips of it, of course, you know, just throwing the pictures up. But
you stayed present, and you could see that that's what was going on, and you could stay with yourself.
Yeah, I could see it then. Some of the times I couldn't. And I would just practice. You know, I really liked what someone said earlier about just practicing, because then in the middle of the night, she's fine-ish, you know, fine-ish. And I'm in bed with her, I'm not fine-ish. You know, I had this throbbing headache. I hadn't eaten. You know, I was just taken to the doctor at 2:30. I didn't eat. And, you know, then they don't have anything at the hospital. It's just horrible. You know, and then I needed a Motrin, but of course I'm not the patient, so they can't give me one. And, you know, it's 2:30 in the morning, and I'm like, what is my alternative? And I didn't have my recording inside. That would have been so helpful. It was in the car. And so I just started turning attention to the breathing. Alternative but to do what I've been trying to do.
Take refuge
in the breath. And, you know, I was, again, it's not like it fixed it. It's not like my headache disappeared.
But what would the point have been of staying there in misery when you have the alternative of just being with your breath?
Right, and being with this part of me who had been through a lot. You know, I got to be with her.
Yes.
Didn't have to change her, didn't have to fix her, didn't have to make it worse.
Hold her hand.
I got to hold her hand and just stay there. There's no clock in the room. And I mean, it was hours that I was just breathing. And then I thought, well, I think I'll check my cell phone and see if it's time. It was 6:10. Called the old husband. I need food and Motrin. Rita. And so it was pretty
big practice opportunity.
I'm so grateful to have practiced before, because the way my system works is anxiety and is fear and is denial and is hiding. You know, with the Enneagram class we're doing, I've just put my head in the sand. This is not happening. You know, Brandon Barrett, survive it.
Yes.
Don't feel it. You know, it was really, you know, tell Claire it's okay. It's not okay.
Yeah.
It's not okay. Having to get a shot in your stomach is not okay. Mm-hmm. And would you like me to hold you?
Yeah.
You know, we'll just breathe together.
Yeah. Taking care of both people.
Yeah, so it was a really good practice opportunity. And if I didn't know egocentric karmic conditioning and the way it works in my system, the self-hate, it would have looked very different.
Yeah, because you would have been caught in it
instead of being able to
still see.
Yeah, believed it was helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really helpful to beat myself up. Well,
she probably never would have gotten to the hospital if you'd been.
That's right. She would never. Well, she would have.
Yeah.
At 10 o'clock at night with a burst appendix, in a lot worse shape. And, still amazed how life, the thing I was struck with most is that life really is carryingness. Mm.
If we don't get in the way.
And for me,
that's
if
a
I
really
don't,
big footnote.
If I don't have the comment and the story and the self-hatred and the self-doubt, I mean, then I would have known, okay, it's, I could have taken it, it could have been not, but that's okay too, okay, it's not. But there would have been a comment about that, well, you wasted people's time and half them, and you're such a hypochondriac, and you have been your whole life.
Yeah,
so anyway, just helpful to see through it, and so grateful for practice.
Yes.
And realizing when the first person talked that the joy was not that she's okay, it was really the joy of having listened to life and to staying present to it unfolding. Not the content.
Right.
Not the content. Similar to what was described about poison oak. You know, we're present to poison oak and our relationship changes. But I came to practice believing if I don't get poison oak, then I'll be okay.
Yes.
You know, that's the
equivalent. It's a good way to spend the rest of your life indoors.
Yeah. Exactly. Indoors. With the shades drawn.
Right.
Thank you.
Krista.
So when people were talking about you know, athletic endeavor and then the nervousness that occurs, it reminded me of this thing that I was practicing in July. And then I got really, had a lot of stuff happen and got caught in the conditioning and got sick, so I stopped practicing.
Kind of forgot about it.
Yeah, I did. But I was doing it in my, with people in my yoga classes as well, so I wanted to share it, and maybe people here would try it and see, give me their, you know, share it in the future. So when you're doing something hard, when I'm doing something hard, it can be like real, it can be like nothing. I mean, it can be like a small heart or a big heart, but something better. And there's that, you know, that identity, you know, we have to be good and it means something and blah, blah, blah. And to fill that with an affirmation of the truth. And the truth, it can be an affirmation like my body is strong and coordinated. Healthy, flexible, coordinated body or something like that. And to say that right as we're doing the whatever the challenges, and I find that in a balancing thing in the class, like everybody all of a sudden get balanced really easily.
So just thinking I can, and it may not do anything for a while, but continuing.
It does it right away?
Instant
change. Yeah, in my experience. And then the other thing that
it's back to the power of positive thinking.
And the other thing that I've been practicing and that it seems to me is that, and I offer this to people in classes, but I think in a yoga class, people, no one ever chooses this one so far. But I think it's the most powerful one. But the reason like we're in those situations and that we doubt ourselves goes back to like we learn, you know, like we do in the There's Nothing Wrong With You, those early childhood places where somehow we got it that we weren't loved and there's something wrong with us and made our whole life out of that. And that what it comes down to is that we believe that we're not loved.
So we believe something, and it could be I can't balance.
But it actually is I'm not loved.
Yes. Yeah.
And that if we go to the most basic thing of replacing it with the message that I'm loved.
Yeah.
I'm loved. That then, like, we're so full that the activity, whatever the thing is, just grows out of that.
Yeah. It comes back to what seems to me to be a theme today, which is taking care of this person.
Yeah.
Of being careful of this person.
Yeah.
And caring of this person.
Yeah. And it's also tuning into the truth, which is, of course, you're loved.
Yeah.
Of course, I mean, the trees are green and you're loved. I mean, it's like, it's hot in the summer and you're loved. You know, it's like just the truth.
Yes.
And then this other thing that we believe is conditioning that we took on. It's, you know, super believable.
It's bad, you know. It's had us
for all these years, so how could it not be true? But it's not. Mm-hmm. The reality is the trees are green and loved.
Yes.
And we are love, not we are love, duh, but we are love, and we are all of that, every form of that. Mm-hmm. And so I've been experimenting, or I was experimenting, until I've forgotten the hair of money, with that. And to me, it's as even more powerful than the affirmation of a physical truth, most operated body, or healthy, flexible shoulder, you know, super fluid.
But I am loved.
Yeah.
Trees are green.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so if people want to practice it and then share, but you have to share when I'm here because no one will tell me.
Or maybe share every time and then you'll be here when. Yeah.
That would be good. Share every time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yes. Is it Jen?
Janice. Yes. Well, what was said just a moment ago about how life kind of carries us if we don't get in the way.
Yes.
That really caught my attention because basically the reason that I'm here today is because a bunch of things happened in my life that, as someone said earlier, don't happen to me, they happen to other people.
Uh-huh.
And it kind
I'm
of,
not that kind of person, sort of.
Yeah. And, you know, they were events completely out of my control. But growing up, my whole life, I had worked hard, done the right thing, and good things had happened to me, so it got to the point where I thought, you know, good things, working hard equals good luck, and then all of a sudden...
I've got this down.
Yeah, all of a sudden, you know, I still have been working hard, and I, you know, but then all these bad things started happening, and it happened in waves, too, which is interesting, because...
In waves,
like one thing would happen, and then I would have an experience around that, and then would kind of sink back into, okay, now I'm going to work hard again. But then something else would knock me off my feet, and that itself has been a really interesting experience, because at first there was just so much resistance, so much of me victimizing myself, why is this happening?
Yeah. The formula is falling apart.
Yeah, basically that's, you know, that's kind of what brought me to meditation, is everything that I thought that I knew about life, about how it worked, about coping, just fell out from underneath me. And so that's a pretty terrifying experience in itself. And then I was just resisting my feelings around everything so much, kind of, you know, not wanting, thinking that if I resisted it, maybe it wouldn't have happened. I'm not sure what the logic behind that was, but I don't know. When she said, like, life just carries you, now I'm at the point where, not that I think that some of those things happen for a reason, but I can see the clear benefit that has come from each of them. And that's been a really interesting experience to see kind of my journey and how it's brought me here.
So seeing how those things have actually, in a way, I don't know if you'd use the language, been gifts of a sort.
Yes.
They have given you things that you might not have sort of thought about at the time, but as you look back on them,
Time, it seems like the worst thing that could ever happen to you.
Yeah.
And a year or two later, it seems like the best thing that could have ever happened.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, and that's just reinforcing the fact that everything that I thought that I knew, not that I know it now, but now I just know that I don't know.
Yes. Yeah.
And
throw the formula out the window.
Yeah. And
there's no connection between A and B.
Yeah, and it's not as, like, one of the gifts that I've gotten from these experiences is that I'm not as scared of being scared anymore. Because bad things have happened to me, and I've met them with the most presence and consciousness and compassion that I could at the time.
Yeah,
and I'm okay.
You're learning that you are adequate to your life, is the way that we might phrase it.
Yes, and as people were talking about before, one thing I've been practicing a lot with lately is trusting my experience over the voices in my head.
That's a big one.
Yeah, it's huge, and I think it's taken me, like, the experiences that I've had have taught me that for so long I thought that my feelings and emotions and what would come up was who I was, or it was who I am.
Yeah.
And now I realize that it's like, if I'm feeling sad or depressed, I used to think, okay, I am a depressed person. But I realize now that it's not, like, I can feel sad without making that who I am. And that's kind of a liberating thing. It takes away the, like, the burden, or again, the fear of being depressed my whole life.
Yeah, it's not describing you. It's not who you are. It's simply whatever feelings happen to be, life happens to be offering you in that moment.
Yeah, and fear has been something that's, like, as talking about trusting my experience over what's in my head, head. Fear has been,
yes.
Lately, fear is normally when I'm talking about practice, it's like fear of the future, fear of ending up alone or this and that. But lately I've had a few experiences where it's like just raw terror. Like I went climbing recently and very, very scared of heights. And so that was really interesting to see.
Interesting to do.
Yeah, yeah. How am I? When I've gone climbing maybe a dozen times, and sometimes it's fine, and then in this recent time, it just kind of, I see stuff, and I had kind of like a minor like anxiety attack, and knowing logically, as like the person I was climbing with was explaining to me, like, there's absolutely no way you can fall. This is why, this is this, this is that. But just watching how my like ego just completely took over, not irrationally. And like last night in my hermitage, I was convinced that a bear was gonna come.
Yes, everybody has to work through that after.
Exactly, and so just watching, you know, I didn't have anything to defend myself with, so I put my chair in front of the door so I would hear it. If you came in,
that bear would have to make a lot of noise.
Yeah.
Buy me some time. Yeah.
But yeah, I just think that has been interesting because it's not, most of the things that I deal with around fear are really emotionally loaded. And when you're dealing with just raw fear, for me, I can just see how it works without getting caught up in the emotion of it.
Yes.
So there's no emotion around climbing or. Besides fear, and there's no emotion around the bear coming in. Like, I don't have a relationship with that.
Yeah, it's interesting. You don't have a relationship with it. What I'm hearing is that the places where there's no emotion is there's no conversation, in a way. There's nothing kind of stirring up saying this is about who you are or anything like that. It's just there is this physical threat that feels real, and I'll deal with it.
Exactly. And then, like, the process, how it forms a loop becomes so obvious, like the process of, like, okay, this is why you shouldn't be scared for A, B, and C reasons, but then I'm really, really scared for this, this, and this reason,
yes.
And it just goes like that.
Yeah.
And that's really way more clear when it's not, you know, I'm scared that I'm not going to end up with this person, and then I will start crying before I even get to the other side of the loop or something.
Uh-huh.
But when it's just, you know, like,
it's kind of a story going on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's much easier to see. I mean, it's the same process all the time, but it's easier for me to identify it when it's just a simple.
You're not emotionally invested in it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So
yeah.
That's been really.
Yeah. Helpful. Great paying attention. It's all helpful to see.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. That's our time.